Welcome to Made in the 80s, podcast about the 80s by people who were made in the 80s. I'm your host, Shalia, and the Made in the 80s crew is here. We have...
Tim.
And Kendon.
How are you guys doing?
Living life, feeling real great.
I'm good.
Good. We are this week talking about a classic, 1988. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka.
Have you ever seen this before?
No, this was my first time.
What?
Yeah. This is my first time.
I'm starting to think that if it's the first time for somebody, like just at least one person in the crew, it maybe makes it a little better.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong.
Yeah. I've always heard about the show, but I, had not ever seen it. And it's not Get You, it's Git You.
G-I-T.
G-I-T. It's a word.
It's a very important distinction in the title.
Okay, so that's what we're discussing this week. But first, do we have any news?
We do have some news. Director Danny Boyle is out as Bond 25 director.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Will you remind me of what he's directed?
Trainspotting, Trainspotting 2, Sunshine.
Sunshine. Yeah. Has one of my favorite songs. What is it? Adiago in D minor?
Yeah.
Like, the theme for it, it's amazing.
It's a good movie.
What Sunshine?
You're the scientist.
I have to say, I'm not that type of scientist. I just love science. So, Sunshine is about... is this near future-ish? The sun has gone out, or is on its way to going out, unexpectedly. So, what they are... The plan is to send... I believe they call it Icarus. Do you remember?
It's Icarus.
An Icarus spaceship with probably like a dozen or so scientists, like the top scientists, to go and take a nuclear device that is designed to restart the sun. But Icarus 1 doesn't ever make it, or they don't ever hear from it.
Yeah.
So actually, we're following the story of Icarus 2. I can't, like, Cillian Murphy...
Captain America's in it.
Oh, this is a comic book?
No. Chris Evans.
Chris Evans. Oh. National Captain
America. Got it.
Michelle Yeoh.
When was this made?
Michelle Yeoh?
I think so. Hold on, let me look it up and see when it was made. Hold on.
So, we're following the crew of the Icarus 2 who don't know what happened. And so they are the last hope, I believe, because they were on, I mean, this is, time is running out.
Yeah, 2007.
2007? Yeah.
Rose Byrne, Cillian Murphy, Chris Evans, Cliff Curtis, Sifo Chung, Michelle Yeoh, Hiroki Sanada. I interviewed him and we talked about it briefly. I interviewed him for some other movie he did for Sif, and I was like, I got a chance to talk. So I was able to talk to him. Alex Garland, who wrote the movie, and Danny Boyle, who directed it. Now, I've had Sunshine questions for all of them.
That's amazing, and a bit of an admission I have to make here. Yeah. I have never sat and watched that movie all the way through. Somehow absorbed the plot, most of the scenes, the music.
Oh, you got to sit down and watch it.
Yeah. I've seen the end theme, the end scenes, the beginning. I don't know how I know so much about it.
I had a theory and I asked Danny Boyle about it. So after you watch it.
We'll talk.
We'll talk because he told me I was right.
But basically they descend into madness, sort of.
Yeah, essentially.
And I don't remember what the cause of it is.
That's my theory.
Okay. But what is the Japanese man's name?
Hiroki, I'm pronouncing his name wrong. Yeah.
Isn't he, his deal is like he's looking at God almost when he's staring at the sun like that close up. So it's like overwhelms him. So anyways, that's what that movie is about. It's one of my favorite movies I have not sat through.
Danny Boyle has also directed The Beach, 28 Days Later, and Slumdog Millionaire, and 127 Hours.
Whoa.
Has he already done a Bond?
No.
Oh.
No. They're looking for new blood to do Bond. His name came up.
And he said, nope.
He said yes immediately, initially, and then they, sort of...
They went through his Twitter feed.
Nah, they parted ways for creative differences. But rumor is people are suggesting Edgar Wright do Bond.
Yeah, they need to give some respect to him. Especially after Baby Driver. Yeah, after Baby Driver.
Yeah, it would be a fun Bond movie.
Yes. I like driving.
All just Bond and Bond, different Bond cars the whole time. Oh,
what if it was a crossover with the Fast and the Furious?
Heck no, yeah, don't. The Rock is the new James Bond.
No way Rock would be James Bond. No. There's absolutely no way he'd be James Bond.
Jason Statham.
Statham would be a better Bond. Statham's a little too cheesy for Bond. I like Statham, but I think he's a little too...
Yeah.
Too on the nose.
He usually is, but if they write a role that's not, maybe he could do it. I've never seen him play that kind of character.
Is Judi Dench still alive?
In the movies or real life?
Real life.
Yeah.
Oh, but in the movie, she's not.
The movie's M's dead, yeah. It's, what's his
name? Ralph Fiennes?
No. Yeah, Ralph Fiennes, yeah.
I was going to say, See, Ralph Fiennes is fairly young, so they can get him for several more movies, but I was thinking that if the window for Idris Elba really has closed, it'd be great if he was become M.
So, Idris Elba is M.
Yes.
I wouldn't be bad. I like him as M.
Yeah. If his, like, time is really...
Yeah. I like him as a Bond villain. Have you seen Luther?
Yeah, oh no, I mean, he could, but I don't want to make him a villain.
That's fair.
I mean, not in the Bond franchise. I feel like that's a consolation prize. Well, M sort of you might consider that a consolation prize, but just like a one-off villain is like, I don't feel like for the caliber of what I wanted from him.
Gotcha. Okay.
So are we back to Tom Hiddleston?
Nah, yeah. I mean, Hiddleston wouldn't be a bad Bond. I don't know if they'd do it, though. I like him as a villain, too. But wait, I don't want people thinking he's Loki.
Was Edward Cullen a British actor? I might could see that.
Edward Cullen? You mean Robert Pattinson? Robert Pattinson? Nah, I don't think he'd do it. He doesn't have the look. The certain look the Bond has, like a classically handsome Brit, he doesn't have that. He's got like that goofy, tall...
I don't think Daniel Craig has that.
He's got the rugged, handsome look. I don't know, Shalia, what do you
think? Charlie Hunnam, rugged, handsome.
I don't think he has the range for it.
Yeah, you know what? He could have the look for it.
I don't think he has the range for it.
But yeah, I don't think he has the range for it. Or he hasn't demonstrated to me.
Yes, he hasn't shown me he has a range.
I stand by my offer, my proposal from Downton Abbey. I think that's how I know him.
Whoa.
You remember who I said?
No, I don't watch Downton Abbey. While you look that up, we can go into what we've been watching.
Okay, what have you been watching?
Look it up. Oh, so while you guys are looking this up, so I just recently watched Searching, the new movie with John Cho. It's about a guy whose daughter goes missing.
How was it?
It was fantastic. His daughter goes missing, and he's forced to find her through social media. So the entire movie takes place on different screens. So we've got a laptop screen, FaceTime, cell phones, TV screens. It's all... His daughter doesn't come home after a study night, and he's wondering what's going on. He thinks she's missing, and so he's not really super close to his daughter, so he doesn't know where to start. But essentially, there are four people in the film. It's John Cho, who plays David, Deborah Messing plays Detective Vic, Joseph Lee plays Peter, his brother, and Michelle Law plays Margot, his daughter. And the director is Anish Chaganty, and it is... A compelling way to tell a story in a legitimate thriller. It's been a while since I've seen like a legit thriller with like very interesting twists and turns in the story. It's fantastic.
It makes me nervous. Like, I think it's an interesting concept of, yeah, seeing things through that point of view. But it makes me nervous. I always think my camera phone is on sometimes when I'm looking at stuff, and I don't know.
It is on.
So is the microphone.
So is the microphone.
And location services.
And your location services are on at all times.
I tell the location services, no, you cannot be on.
They're like, sure, wink, wink, we're off. But we're on.
I think your phone isn't even off when you power it off.
It's never really off. Have you guys seen Terms and Conditions May Apply? It's on Netflix. It's
a no.
It's going to freak. Don't let Shalia watch it. Can then you watch it? And then you tell Shalia what you saw because it's going to stress her out the entire time she watches it.
Is it the one
I saw at SIFF a while ago?
Did they include the woman who spilled coffee, had the hot coffee.
No. That story's not in there. But they're very fascinating stories in it, and they just sort of are tracking what our devices are doing and when we say yes to these terms and conditions, what that actually means, because no one reads them. I just want iTunes. I want Apple Music. I'm just going to click.
I remember a South Park episode connected with the human centipede.
Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm. No, but as Jessica always says, South Park be knowing.
Yeah, that was fairly early, where they were like, Kyle didn't read the terms and conditions on his he updated the firmware on his phone, and it's funny because he gets to the basketball court where like all the other kids are, and they're like, "What, dude? You don't read that?" And he's like, "No, of course I don't." And like they're claiming they all read the entire.
No one reads them.
So, anyways, he had apparently agreed to be sewn ass to mouth like the human centipede with an iPad. At the beginning.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But it reminds me of that clip that we watched last week about the record companies. So when you're saying yes to these terms and conditions because you want access to whatever, right? Apple Music for $9 a month. You're also saying yes to a bunch of other stuff that's sort of in there. And it's all this legalese and it's meant for people not to understand.
But what are you agreeing? Like, okay, what are you agreeing to for your example? Like, what are they going to get out of you?
Allowing law enforcement access to your phone.
Or your account.
Yeah, it's that kind of stuff.
So
yes, see? It's that kind of stuff you're saying yes to.
Oh, man. I've forgotten.
Watch the documentary because there's a story a guy tells about an incident he had at an Apple store.
I'm going to have to look this up for the listeners. But if you have, I believe if you open your phone with your face, fingerprint, or eye, the police can compel you to open your phone. Mm-hmm. But if you open your phone with, what do you call it?
A passcode?
A passcode or the little pattern, mm-hmm. They can't, because you cannot be compelled by law enforcement or the government, I guess, to, expose the contents of your mind, right? So, if you, yes, basically have that at least as a backup. If for whatever reason the cops come after me, if all I have to do is hit restart on my phone will not allow me to open it after a restart without putting in a code. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good trick. That's the reason I did not use a fingerprint for a really long time on my phone. And then it occurred to me that I really don't have anything on my phone that I am that worried about the police seeing. So I decided not to worry about it too much. And yes, if I really want, mine is more like the TSA thing. Did you hear about like TSA going on people's or Border Patrol looking at people's Facebook posts, mm-hmm. and seeing like, what are you about? And so that's more where I'm like, if I'm going to have to do that, then I will turn off my fingerprint.
That's why I'm not on Facebook.
But one of the things that the film talks about is like, it's how this information is interpreted is another piece of it, right? So having access to information and having information there is one thing, but how it's interpreted by a third party, mm-hmm. is the difference between you going to jail and maybe not going to jail, or a charge or not having a charge. And that's the hard, because you're talking about all these different law enforcement municipalities can't agree simply on what one thing means, like that A plus B equals C. So how are they going to decide like what you're, so for instance, like if there's a story in there about a guy who's a guy from Britain and he was coming over here and he was like, I'm coming to LA to like paint the streets something, but it was some clearly like British slang.
And it's like paint the streets red. It was something
super British slang, right? Yeah. Then, you know, and when he got to customs, they stopped him because of a tweet. And he was like, it took him a while to be like, wait, am I here because of the tweet I sent? And they were like, yeah. He was like, that's like a slang. But now every time he flies, this thing pops up that he was held at customs. Like, it's a mess. That's just one example of what's in the film.
Something like that almost happened to me.
Ooh, tell us, please.
I had my bachelor party in Whistler. Mm-hmm. And we went to a cigar shop while we were up there. Bought some cigars. And some of them were Cuban, apparently. So, I didn't finish them all. So they went into the box with the other cigars, put them in my bag, whatever. We were driving back, hit the border. My friend was driving. And when they were like, are you bringing anything back? Blah, blah, blah. Which just say no. I mean, unless it's really something. And he was like, ha, ha, ha. No, just a few eggs. Like, because, you know, we didn't cook all the eggs or whatever. And the border people who have no sense of humor said, okay, great, go that way. So then...
He doesn't understand protocol.
Yeah. So, of course, they search the entire van. Yeah. They find a couple of Cuban cigars, which is illegal. Mm-hmm. And so I'm talking to the people and they're like, okay, you can either have these, what did they say, confiscated at the border. And if we do that, every time you try to re-enter the country, you're going to be given trouble. I don't remember exactly how they said, but they're going to check you every single time, they said. Yeah. Or you can walk back across the border and quote-unquote dispose of them.
Yeah.
Which means me and my friend walked across, a different friend, walked across the border, smoked a couple of Cuban cigars in the cold and wind. But on the way across, I needed to talk to the Canadian side, apparently. They said, make sure you talk to the Canadian side. Canadian side, one of the person I talked to first was like newer. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "What you need to do what? I don't get it."
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Obama had just like started to open up Cuba, the whole relationship with Cuba, just like the week before. And so finally he called over like, not his supervisor, but at least an older like employee. And he's like, what's going on? And the guy said, oh, they have some problem with Cuba. I don't get it. just go walk across the border.
Yeah.
Like, it was so dismissive.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. My sister is recently trying to do some more traveling. She was talking about Canada. She has a minor, like, a salty thing that happened years ago in Sacramento.
Hey, wait. Was she salty? Was it
salty? Did she eat some pepper?
It was a little salty.
Needs pepper?
Yes. Yeah, it's a little. It's nothing. It's back in her. This was years ago. My nephew's, what, 12? So this was, like, 15 years ago. And, but I was like, yo, get that cleared up because Canada's notorious for, like, just not letting people in.
They're
like, it's no joke for them.
We've done a couple caravans and had people, like, where people get caught up at the border. Yeah. We're on the phone, like, where are you guys? Well, a few of us have DUIs.
Yeah, they don't play.
No.
Do not
come in our country.
Yeah, I was listening to, God, who was that? It was some rapper was talking about going on tour. And he was like, yeah, we'll get to, like, so we'll do a tour, right? We'll do Northeast, right? We'll do Boston. We'll do Philly. We'll do New York. And then while we're up there, oh, YG. And YG was like, yeah, while we're up there, we'll do, like, all right, well, since we're up here, let's hit Canada. Let's hit Montreal.
Toronto.
I was
Toronto
really hoping you were
going to
say Drake, though.
No, Toronto, no. But he was like, he said before he became YG that we know, he was like, his lawyer cleared all that stuff up. He said, but I got guys with me who can't come, so they just have to chill out in a hotel in Boston for like a week because they just can't get in there. They can't get in. And he was like, yeah, that's like half of my guys will just be in Boston because they can't come with us. That's a real thing.
Hilarious. Actually, it makes me think of another South Park where around the election, Mr. Garrison started to basically become Trump and the Canadians decided to build a wall to keep out the riffraff from south of their border.
I wouldn't blame them. Anyway, that's what I've been watching. I was watching Searching, and I would highly recommend everyone watch Terms and Conditions May Apply. It's on Netflix right now. It's a fantastic documentary.
Okay. So during that, while you were talking about Searching, I was searching the internet.
Good.
Yeah. My proposal for Bond was Dan Stevens.
Yeah, I just watched him the other day, and he was in that Thurgood Marshall movie. He played the other lawyer.
And
he's also in Downton Abbey.
My proposition is Michael Sheen. Tim?
I don't know if I know who that is.
I like Michael Sheen. Yeah, you do.
That's a joke answer, Shalia.
Dan Stevens was actually in The Guest. It was a great movie as well. You guys haven't seen The Guest?
No.
Nope.
Oh, man.
What's it about?
It's about a guy who shows up at this family's house claiming to be the friend of their son who died in Afghanistan.
Mm.
And he shows up to say, you know, your son always talked about you and I just wanted to come give he saved my life and I wanted to come share that with you. But as the movie goes on, he's not who he says he is.
Ooh, that happens.
It's fantastic.
In the show we're talking about this week too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great.
So Michael Sheen's the prime minister. I do know who Michael Sheen is. He could do it.
The prime minister and...
I have no idea what he played the prime minister in, but he will forever be the prime minister to me.
Oh, I thought you were saying in the Bond movies.
Oh, no. In something else, he plays the Prime Minister.
He was in 30 Rock, I think, as...
He was in Twilight.
Twilight as well. Yes, he was one of the Volturi, mm-hmm. which is a term I should not know.
Look at you. Twilight fan fiction over there. This guy.
I brought up Edward.
Yeah, I know. First it's Edward. Wait, tell us about your history with Twilight.
Okay, I made the mistake of downloading... Is the Statute of Limitations...
Past.
Are you looking for an actual statute of limitations right now?
I found a way for Shalia to watch S-O-L. The first Twilight movie, which is trash. I mean, from a production standpoint.
I love it.
Right. And then I got dragged to at least two more. I have not seen the last one. I guess they showed like a major like battle. Mm-hmm. And then they rolled it back and said it was all in somebody's mind. I do not care.
5 year rule?
I do not care.
Are we okay?
It is 5 years. Come on. Yeah.
It has been 5 years?
Oh, yeah. Breaking Dawn?
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I'd seen a couple of those in the theater.
Yeah, that was 2012.
Great. I don't think I drank enough before going to those movies. I did. I was drunk. Or not drunk, but... I was intoxicated when Shalia dragged me to 50 Shades of Grey.
I thought that was a really funny trick.
She had like seen it twice.
I saw it and I was like...
In one day.
I think I want Kendra to see this.
And
it
I believe
like a good idea.
This was an example of when I was the only person who thought I was watching a comedy. And so I might have been fairly irritating because I kept laughing.
I don't recall that because that was my point of bringing you because I thought you were going to find it hilarious.
I did. I was like, what is going on? And why so many people wrapped with their attention is just on the screen.
Yeah. All right. So, Kendon, what have you been watching, thinking about, listening to?
So, I've got basically what have I been building?
Oh, okay.
I got for my birthday the Voltron Defender of the Universe Lego set, which I believe is like 14, 15 inches tall. And I've started on the Black Lion. I'll form the head. Although I wanted to start with the sword, kind of.
Why didn't you?
So I went onto YouTube to watch the scene where they go together, and I decided to go in order.
Kendon cares a lot about order, so that makes sense. And nomenclature.
Did I already talk about sharp ends?
No, you didn't. What's sharp ends?
Sharp objects?
No, I want to watch that, but Shalia can't be around for it. Joe Abercrombie is one of my favorite fantasy writers. He has a set of, short stories. And I'm rereading those. So that's about it.
Is it good? Is it worth
reading?
Oh,
it's awesome.
Now, Joe Abercrombie has like a trilogy. There's a whole set of books, but there's like the First Law trilogy.
Yes.
And what you're reading, Sharp Ends, is kind of like that Sookie Stackhouse that I was listening to, where it's like short stories that fit in and out of different times for this world and these characters. Do you think that someone could listen to these without having read the trilogy and enjoy it as much? And if so, what should they read first? If they're going to eventually read the trilogy, should they do that first?
This would be a perfect, from my point of view, a perfect end for the series. Because it's less commitment, and you can see if you like the writing, you like the character types that he writes. It doesn't really ruin anything, because... He does this really well because, like you said, there's the First Law trilogy, which is, you know, your standard sort of get the gang together, go and fight your enemies, whatever. But it's with a twist, I guess I would say. And then there's three books that are more or less standalone that come afterwards. But he does a really good job of there's always one or two characters who you recognize who are maybe minor characters in another story. So you're weaving in and out of... with those like connections. That's very much what the short stories in Sharp Ends are. Like, you'll be like, oh, I recognize this character. Oh, you know, I see this little connection, or I see how a certain person got to a certain place. And if you start with that, actually, if you were to go backwards after reading the main books, in a way might spoil what happens in these short stories. So several of these short stories are telling you the background for some of these characters.
Yeah, I think that's true. So, because one of the fun things, though, for me was listening, I think, to the first of the stories was I knew what was going to happen. And it doesn't go into that part, but they reference it a lot in the books. And so I'm like, wow. But the story was about like the build up to something that I know is going to happen. And then they don't actually go there. So it was fun, I thought, to listen to it going, knowing what was going to happen. But I think it could work either way.
And they also introduced two of my top 3 to 5 characters in the whole series in this. I would highly recommend. And like I said, it's a lower barrier of entry to see whether or not you'd be interested in the rest of the series. And I think in 2019, his next trilogy will come out, which is still set in that world, but a few years on, almost like the difference between the last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, where the world has moved on a bit, so it's a little more kind of industrialized, which you get throughout the books, where they're going from late Renaissance, Age of Exploration sort of setting, and then kind of moving more into industrial sort of. But since there's magic, it kind of makes sense that that this is progressing a little faster.
Yeah, we should probably let the listeners know if they're interested in this, that yes, there is magic. It's definitely, is it sci-fi?
No, it's fantasy. It's a fantasy series. It's got that kind of grittier Game of Thrones style to it, but lot less expansive than that.
Well, and it's not so, Game of Thrones is like over the top sex violence, sexual violence, all that. These are not so much of that.
These are over the top, way over top violence and over the top sex, but not over the top sexual violence.
Cool. All right. So anything else that you've been watching, listening to, doing you want to talk about?
No. That's okay. About it.
So I have been watching Hard Knocks this year's season. So on HBO every year, there is a season of Hard Knocks, and it follows an NFL team during training camp. Mm-hmm. And so you get to know the players, the coaches, and just the different dynamics between them. You get to see them practice. And it's really fun. So this year, the team is the Cleveland Browns, and I'm loving it because it introduces you to a team, and usually it makes me like the team more, which it has so far. And I got to watch them play because we're in preseason right now when we're recording. So I got to watch them play, and it's fun because I have a little bit more investment in the players and their personalities. And, you know, especially preseason games, you're watching people, you know, trying to make their spot on the team. And so you're like rooting for people like, dude, have a good game. And you're really excited about it. And it's like, I think a fun, different view of the NFL that it's kind of a perfect thing to have going in while you're watching the preseason and getting you ready for the actual season to start, which I'm excited about. And I'm not boycotting, I don't think.
I'm surprised you watched the show. I figured people being cut would be sad for you.
Oh, it's really sad for me. Like, it's like, oh, man. And even, like, people not getting cut, but, like, what season was it? Maybe when they were in Houston, like, the two quarterbacks, who's going to be our starting quarterback? And it's, oh, like, I love them both, and I feel for them, and I'm just like, oh, I want you to get it, but I want you to get it, and then one doesn't get it, and, man, it's heartbreaking.
Shalia, do you remember a few years ago where I was trying to be like more supportive of your football fandom, and I think I was at TJ Maxx and I bought you a Seahawks t-shirt.
Yes, you did. It was so nice of you.
Was he number 15, Flynn?
It was someone who wasn't on our team.
he was like a quarterback that got cut or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was very proud of myself. He's like, look what I got. For like an hour.
Until he got it home.
I still have that shirt.
Thank you. He does still have that shirt.
I think I do like housework or yard work in it.
It's still a Seahawks shirt. You're still repping our team.
I can't go out in public with it though.
Oh, that's also a thing. Did I tell you what I did this week? So I thought that the Seahawks were playing on a Thursday and had my Seahawks gear on, made it all the way to Safeway to get on the light rail, and checked my phone to see what time the game was going to be, and it was going to be on a Friday. So I had to turn, I was like, nope, not showing up, not doing it. So I turned around and I had to change the clothes because I did not want to be that person wearing her gear on the wrong day.
I mean, I feel like you could just own it and then wear a different the next day.
I considered it and then decided, no, I'm not going to do that. I chose not to. All right. So that is what we've been up to this week. We've also been watching I'ma Get You, Sucka. Whose idea was this?
It was Kendon's idea. I don't know why he's pretending like he didn't say it.
We're both looking at Kendon. Yeah, Kendon, I'm pretty sure this was your idea.
Oh, absolutely. I don't remember what brought it to my mind, but this was a... It was one of my favorites growing up.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been one that we were always going to do no matter what. So excited that we got to, finally.
Yeah, it's something recently brought it to mind. And I was like, this would be a perfect... Just a perfect movie to do.
So, since it was your idea, Kendon, do you want to give us the plot? Or do we want to talk about who's in this first?
Let's talk about the movie first.
Who directed it?
Who directed it? So this movie is...
Kendon Ivory Wayans?
How old? 30 years old? 40 years old?
Literally 30.
Years, 30 years, yeah.
30 years old. It is Kendon Ivory Wayans, directed, wrote it. This is 2 years before
and
Living Color.
In it.
And starred in it. This is 2 years before In Living Color.
What?
Mm-hmm.
So that was going to be my question is the Kenan Wayans and then the like the brothers and the rest of the family is really famous. And I was wondering in 1988 what their status was at that time.
No, nothing really under their belt. So really? Kenan Ivory Wayans stars along with Bernie Casey, Antonio Fargas, Steve James, Isaac Hayes, Jim Brown, Jeanette Dubois, Don Lewis, we all recognize, John Vernon, Kadeem Hardison, and Damon Wayans.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And amazing, Chris Rock. Amazing setup.
I was saying, and there's lots of cameos.
And Chris Rock is in it.
Or slash, what do they call it? Special appearances?
I think maybe cameos. Is right. Because yeah. John Witherspoon.
Witherspoon opens yeah. it. He's opening the opening with the funeral.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the guy who's the news reporter who's like, I grew up in suburbs.
David Allen Greer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So a lot of people in this.
How many, like, was that like the, without Jim, if Jim Carrey was in it, wouldn't this basically be.
Is Tommy Davidson in this? No.
You're right. Yeah, he's not in it.
No.
Okay. So what's the movie about? What's the premise? What's the plot?
So the plot of this movie, basically it starts off. With some homicide detectives, right? Mm-hmm. Am I missing anything before that? No.
Well, it takes place in any ghetto USA. This is where. This
oh,
is the first
I thought it was
says.
New York. I thought mm-hmm. it was okay. Well, I mean, of course, that actually makes sense. So some homicide detectives find a body, and he's just out on the street, and they have him covered up, and they're like, "He died of OG." Being apparently an overdose of gold chains, mm-hmm. and he looks ridiculous. He's like almost like mummified looking,
right.
Sarcophagus sort of thing, just covered in gold chains. And they begin what I think is a hilarious joke, which reminds me of Demolition Man and the Three Shells, mm-hmm. when everybody keeps asking, "How did he go to the bathroom?"
Right.
Nobody has the answer.
Right.
So it's
Junebug. Spade that died.
You know, it was funny. Junebug Spade. I was like, I had a cousin named Junebug.
We all did.
Right? Right. Mm-hmm. And then I had to step back and I was like, I have a cousin who we called Junebug.
Yeah.
I don't know his name.
Yeah. We call him Junebug. I don't know his real name.
Yeah. So he dies. And then... We go to the funeral,
mm-hmm.
hilarious scene where the preacher or pastor, played by John Witherspoon, gives his rousing, you know, what do you call it at a funeral?
Eulogy.
There we go. Until the majority of the crowd realizes that the person who is being buried is not who they came for. At which point they all get up and start leaving, complaining. And while they're doing it, they're grabbing the flowers off of the casket. All that's left.
They were all late because that service was at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Like it had already happened.
Exactly.
So, Kenny, before you get too much more into the plot, maybe we should mention that this is a parody movie, right? Have we said that yet? Satire?
I think satire.
Mm-hmm. A satire on blaxploitation films?
Correct.
Yes.
That's where Isaac Hayes comes in. That's where some of the iconic scenes come in. What is it?
Well, a bunch of these guys are...
Karate Joe scene?
Yes.
That's a scene from Three the Hard Way.
Was he Kung Fu Joe?
Kung Fu Joe. That's a scene from Three the Hard Way. Where Jim Kelly gets pulled over by the police. And he's like, try to set me up. And he beats up these cops. I can show you the scene when we're done. That's the scene. And they take it and they flip it.
A blaxploitation version of The Expendables.
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah. It's just in a way, like bringing them out of retirement. Well, I don't know if they're in retirement. And
the 80s, they weren't really doing those movies anymore. 88, they weren't. Those movies were done.
Because it was like the 70s, yeah. Right?
Well, I was thinking in The Expendables, they're coming out of retirement, sort of, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, just a correction, because I'm not going to try to usually do this, but according to Wikipedia, The Last Dragon is... a blaxploitation movie. So.
I don't know. Wikipedia's not always correct.
I think people might have different views on what is actually.
When Kung Fu Joe walked in, I was like, this is absolutely. Like, this is Last Dragon sort of stuff. Anyways, I won't get caught
up
on
that. This is not a blaxploitation film.
Well, I mean, in that it's a satire parody,
which I think Last Dragon was also. I think that was the point that we made.
No, that movie was taking itself seriously.
It was, but it wasn't.
It was still very much a
comedy. It was an homage, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, so I thought that it doesn't count as blaxploitation like Shaft does.
Okay, anyways, I just... Wikipedia backs me up. Anyways, so... turns out the only two people there for his funeral were his mother and widow. I do not know what the widow's name is.
Cheryl.
The actress, I meant.
Donna Lewis?
What is she from? Do you recognize?
She was in A Different World, wasn't she?
Yes, she totally was. She was like the level-headed. Was she roommates with...
Denise. So she was an older student?
She was Jaleesa in A Different World.
Kendon.
Whitney?
Huh?
Was she Whitney's roommate? She was
Jaleesa
as well?
In A Different World.
She was Denise's roommate.
But
and
not
Marissa
Whitney.
Tomei. Whitley, I think, maybe tried to room with them for a second and it didn't work. No, Denise tried to room with Whitley for a second. Whitley had her own room. No one wanted to be Whitley's roommate.
Well, so, okay, you've watched it more recently. I just remember those two characters being not Denise, but the other two characters being like a good foil for each other.
Oh yeah.
So I had to assume that they were roommates at one point because that would have been good comedic gold.
Yeah. No. Her story was like she was older. She's not like. You know, in her 20s versus these kids who are like straight from high school.
Oh, so that's why she was like the level-headed one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think she had a kid. Did she have a kid?
Was she like in grad school or something?
Man, I do not remember that show.
Oh.
We're going to have to get to it.
She wasn't. Yeah,
we'll get
she
to
was
it.
In
I don't remember anything
with them.
When did it start? Was it like 88 or 89? Okay. Cool.
So.
87.
So you left off. We're at the... funeral, only two people are left, and that's our introduction to Junebug's mom and widow. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to after the funeral at their apartment.
Yep. I love that the mom, like, so Cheryl is like, oh, and he had no friends, and his mom's like, yeah, but that boy wasn't shit. Like, yeah. The mom's just very much like, I know my son. What did she say? He probably owed everybody he knew money.
Yeah.
So they get a...
which doesn't really make sense. Like, Cheryl seems like... the house seems put together. They live with the mom. Like, I just, it's hard for me to imagine how that looked in life when he was that way.
He must not have lived there. With
them. I don't think he lived there.
He didn't live with his wife?
No.
Not with his mom.
Who was his mom?
Maybe the wife and the mom had their own place. Yeah.
She's there because he passed.
Junebug and the wife. And maybe they couldn't afford, and she now is moving in or staying there more.
I thought they lived there with her. Mm-hmm. Like the mom lived with Junebug and Cheryl.
I still think, I mean, I guess there's
definitely... No, that was her house because Jack's room is the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the mom's house.
Yeah. I thought Junebug and Cheryl lived with the mom.
From everything we get about Junebug, I couldn't believe that Cheryl was his wife.
That's what I mean. Like, it just didn't seem like it fit.
It didn't really add up.
It didn't. I don't think people knew what he was into.
But she did. No.
She was like
you
she
saw
was
him
like,
with all those
that
chains.
Picture.
Yeah, that's right.
The OG with his overgold.
And they were like, oh, he started selling drugs. No, they knew what he was into.
I think it's a metaphor for the drug epidemic in the 80s, obviously. And that's what was happening.
They definitely separate, though. They don't use gold as a stand-in for drugs. Mm-hmm. It's, like, on top of drugs.
No, I mean, but, like, as far as, like, the way it's sort of, like, the crack bomb goes off and the way it was regular. So, we look at them now because we're older. These guys are crackheads, but when it hit, it was like postmen and people they knew and friends and husbands who had wives like her who were like, what do you mean he sucks on this thing? And because no one knew what it was doing. It was just this addiction that popped out of nowhere.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But I think he was a pusher.
Yes, as well.
Okay. So they get a visit. One of them is named Weasel, right?
Leonard and Willie.
They referred to him as Weasel on the... subtitles at one point.
Played by.
So this is where we get Damon Wayans and Kareem Hardison.
Kadeem Hardison.
Kadeem. I always thought it was Kareem. Okay. No, Abdul Jabbar.
And they say that they are friends of Junebugs and they're like, oh, he did have friends. Let them in. And that was didn't we talk earlier about someone who pretended to be something and were let in? Yeah. This was my.
And these are real names.
They do. One of them does. And these two are like really one of the best parts of the movie. And a lot of the best like recurring jokes. Mm-hmm. Kadeem Hardison is kind of the dumber of the two. Mm-hmm. Kind of like they had the good pigeons or the good feathers on Animaniacs.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways,
they say they come in and say basically that Junebug owes their boss, Mr. Big, $5,000. And so now they're coming to Cheryl and the mom to say, now you owe this $5,000. Mm-hmm. And apparently
to pay it off, they're going to prostitute Cheryl.
Yeah.
Essentially. And that's what the information, that's the info to bring back to Mr. Big. And they tell Mr. Big, if you bring Cheryl back, then we're square. Because Junebug worked under them, they owe Mr. Big the money.
So, I have a point about that, actually. But while they're at the house, they start messing shit up and then get worked by the mom. Mm-hmm. And that's where the joke, you can either leave through the window or down the stairs starts. And they keep choosing the stairs and get thrown out down the stairs.
Yeah, every time.
Okay, I'm not, like, a criminal of this sort, but I feel like...
Of this sort?
Yeah. Of any sort. Are you? I feel like they might have just been better off paying the $5,000 themselves
that
and then just going
to
find a way.
Say, that assumes they have the money.
I feel like over the course of events in this movie, like that week or whatever time it was, they could have made the money.
They probably thought it was easier and quicker just to pinch them for the money. That's why they did it.
Yeah. As I was watching it, I was just like, well. So, at the time they get thrown down the stairs, our hero, played by Keenan Ivory Wayans, his name is Jack. So he's Jack Spade, the Jack of Spades. Shows up, and his mother is very excited to see him. She left his room just the way it was when he left for the military, which means it's dirty and grimy as shit. And that kind of kicks off, basically, he wants to, gather up a bunch of black heroes from the 70s and kick Mr. Big out of town.
Yeah, he wants to find out who did this to his brother. And finally, it's Mr. Big and wants to clean up the streets and is forced to lean on the old guard who...
is in retirement.
But they cleaned up Mr. Big before, so he goes out and sort of appeals to the, what's his name? What's the guy's name? Spade?
Slade.
Slade. So Slade about, hey, the conversation he has with Slade about his mom is hilarious.
I feel like he has a couple like that, doesn't
and
he?
Slade's doing like Olympics for criminals.
Yeah. Okay. Youth gang competition.
Did you get a shiver at the beginning of that? Where the cop shoots they shoot the gun up in the air. I don't know if you even see it's a cop to begin with for a race.
And they're running from the dogs with the TVs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. But then he points the gun at them as they start running away.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they also have the strip the car race.
Yeah, very Street Fighter 2 bonus round.
It was. Yeah.
Very much that.
So, and the rest of it, like, the plot plays out. I don't think I should go into detail. It's kind of like a series of sketches is the way it felt to me.
Yeah, which would lead you to see why Kenny and Ivan Wayne was so good at Living Color.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of mode. Because everything is a sketch. Like, Chris Rock showing up to get the rib is a sketch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a great one. Shalia had to go and grab something from upstairs. And she's like, don't pause the movie. And it was right at the beginning of that scene.
Yeah.
And I paused the movie. She's like, why are you pausing the movie? I was like, because you cannot miss this part.
I didn't realize it was that part that was going to be playing.
Because Rock said that's the scene that people constantly mention to him.
Oh, yeah. Good Lord.
Still.
It's hilarious.
And he's Chris Rock.
He just wants one rib.
It's still the thing people bring up. That's crazy.
And he had all that cash in him. That was the other part. Like, he's like counting his change.
And then he pulls out.
And then it's like, no, you have it. You just.
Yeah, that's the setup for most of the movie, right? Or scenes like that.
Yeah.
It's a humor situation, and then the punchline is this really funny sort of like, it's all setting up for this hilarious punchline at the end. Like,
well, the other one that was hilarious to me was when Cherry at the bar, like, seduce Jack, and they go upstairs, and she's like, you got the 12 inches I need. And then they get up there, he's like, I have an admission, I don't have 12 inches. She's like, you know, my eyes aren't really green, so she pulls out the contacts. This isn't really my hair. Apparently, she's bald. Yeah. Then what is she pulls off her bald, tits.
She has these like tiny little pieces of hair, and she has like one of them is like a little bow on it.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, that makes it even worse.
Yeah. And she got like a fake butt, fake ass. Boobs. She's like, it's not even the right color.
And missing a leg.
And
then she's like, he's like, I like how he's reaching for his jacket with his leg. Just starts drawing it in. And then she's like, don't make me hop after you.
Yeah, you know, that scene when Kenny and Ivy Wayans like reacting and reaching for the jacket is part of what makes the movie funny. There's a lot of little physical bits that these characters do to sell the humor. That scene's not as funny if he just sits in there quietly and watches her do it. It's funny because they cut his reaction of him like trying to find a way out. Like he's somehow afraid of this woman who's 110 pounds.
There was a similar, I feel like, what you're talking about with Fly Guy.
Yeah.
When he wins Pimp of the Year.
Yeah.
And he's standing there, like, doing that that pageant look. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, he's just, like, he just has all that pride that these people, like.
That's also, that scene is where Enos, I don't want to jump ahead to influences, but that's the player hitter's ball from the Chappelle Show.
Well, and I would think also, Bitch Better Have My Money.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, people have been saying that for a long time, I'm sure, but that's, I feel like, came into the public consciousness.
Yeah.
So another
When Fly Guy leaves prison, is even another funny sort of sketch.
Yeah.
Where he thinks he's Fly, and then people are sort of making, roasting him as he walks down the street. They're just roasting this man.
I felt so bad for him.
So yeah, Shalia was like, aw.
And then he breaks his shoes, and the fish are just dying on the sidewalk. And I'm like, someone help these fish.
He starts limping away.
And somebody's like, is that an endangered species?
Yeah, see, I mean, he was in prison, right? It's like a callback. So one of the other scenes I think fits in this, tell me if I'm wrong, is Kung Fu Joe going to warn Slade that he's going to get set up. And so he's like, drags himself to the front of his apartment and calls up and is like, they're coming for you. And then Slade's like, sorry, I'm not home right now. Like, it was just one of those like.
It's one of those messages where he's responding. He's it sounds like
hello, this is
a conversation.
And then, I mean, it's like such an old joke.
Just a little insight into Shalia's family. That's the sort of humor they love to do on the phone. Except for they pretend to be an answering machine.
My Uncle West recently was like, if this is Shalia, press 6.
Yes.
And then I was like, okay, I'm going to play along. And I start looking for my number 6 button and I press it. And he thought it was hilarious. Because it was me. And so I pressed 6. Okay.
So it's a series of sketches.
The Karate Joe thing is a sketch when he gets pulled over by the cops that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
When Isaac Hayes has all those guns on him and he falls down. That's another sketch.
The jumping down, the rappelling down the building with bombs to make a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going so long that the bomb blows up before he gets to the right place. Right. And there's just a smoking rope hanging there.
And it makes a sound, but it's nothing more than is it Damon who's like, did you fart?
No. Well, that's funny because it's a really loud noise that it makes.
It's a loud noise, And then the shootout they get into.
That one always, when
they use the guy's body. That. And then the guy farts when he steps on him.
Oh, that different than I was thinking. I was thinking the shootout where like the bad guys all have like pew, pew little guns. And then like the our heroes have like these big, massive, like, baka, baka. And then, which one of them is it? It's Damon, right? In that scene. And he's like, man, this isn't fair. I can't. That gun holds 6 bullets. I count 20 shots without reloading.
That was Kadeem.
Kadeem
is Mr. Big's nephew.
Yeah. And he, who is it? Who is it? Richard Roundtree or is it Isaac Hayes at that point?
Roundtree.
I think. And he's just like, yep. And points it at him. I guess we just could go through all of the sketches.
No,
really.
they're all it's just a bunch of funny sketches that, you know.
Mom keeps showing up to fight his battles for him.
That fight scene, 'cause two fight scenes really crack me up still. The fight scene when she shows up at the diner and it's clearly a stunt double.
Yeah.
Is hilarious.
Doing the backflips or
whatever. Yeah, that's very black exploitation film like, where it's clearly a dude with a facial hair doing these stunts in this bar. And the other one is when they go to the club, the big hat club.
And there's somebody in there.
And there's a midget. And it's the midgets that they referenced earlier that beat him up when his mom is pretty much saying, like, you would cry after these midgets beat you up. And he sees them. So it's this big Kenan Ivory Wayans jumping on a midget and, like, trying to fight him and wanting his 5 cents back from when he was a kid.
And the guy's like, what do you say? From the belt down, you're mine.
Yeah.
Who is that guy? He's also a famous
actor. Yeah, he was in
like a Friday movie or something?
Yeah, he's in like Next Friday. He's also in Me, Myself, and Irene. He's been in a bunch of movies. He's in Bad Santa.
And in Friday.
Yeah. Is he the one with the hot wife in Friday?
Yeah.
He's funny. So yeah, so he's in that. And that scene is funny because there's midgets hiding inside these gigantic gallon hats.
Yeah.
And they're like a notorious gang of midgets. He said... A family of midgets is a gang. Like they were like, oh, they're midgets. You can't fight them. He was like, they're not midgets. They're a gang.
But the midgets in the scene are the little people.
The little people
in the scene are not all related.
Only
the one that he fights is from the family of little people.
Right, it's Evans' family.
Yeah, the Evans family. Yeah.
He recognized one of them. It's like, I remember that. That's my nickel.
Yeah.
All right. So what else do you guys want to talk about this? It's
the thriller scene when she has cramps and she's walking down the street.
Funny.
It's another bit.
Yeah. And he's like, ah! And Kadeem Hardison comes up and he's like, are you screaming like for my help? And he's like, I was whistling. He's like, you were whistling, help get this bitch off me. And he's like, yeah.
Oh, man.
I think I could go on and on, but I don't know. We need to move to the next part.
They do a lot, and there wasn't really a lot of humor out there like that. There was, like, specifically pointed at black culture and what was happening in the culture and communities at the time. So this was very, in 88, like, a rare thing. Now we have, like, different outlets. You've got people who have their own YouTube channels, who have their own, you know, people on Twitter who are funny, who can do their own videos on their phone.
The Wayans made, like, their own industry of this sort of thing for a while.
With the scary movie franchises. But in 88, there was nothing really, there weren't, other than Robert Townsend, there weren't a bunch of other people doing this kind of comedy. So to have a movie like this, there was so many young comics before they were super famous, and have these little bits and sketches in there that like allow people to be funny and were kind of culturally specific at times, was really brilliant. Like, and it still holds up. Like, it's the one thing I always say about comedy, like good comedy still holds up. And some of these jokes are really, really funny still.
And not in the same culture, but I guess this was right on the heels of the first Naked Gun movie. Mm-hmm. So kind of like another satire of the sort of action movies of the time or the previous time.
So how old were you guys when you saw this movie? How close in time to its release did you see it?
I probably saw it in the early 90s. So yeah. 92.
Same. I definitely didn't see it in theaters. My parents were not going to let me watch it in theaters, but I definitely.
So what, 7 maybe? For me, I mean.
12 probably.
Okay. And I did not remember, and you were saying the same thing. I did not remember all of this swearing. Mm-mm. So it had to have been maybe my parents like recorded it off of
TV
cable or something.
Yeah, because I remember it being PG-13, and I don't know why. So when all the swearing happened, I was like, "Oh, this was just rated R."
It's much better with it.
Is it R?
It's got to be. Let's check. The amount of violence and the amount of swearing.
So while Tim's checking on the rating, Kendon, what was the scenario in terms of watching this? Is this something that you watch at home with your parents? Is this something that you watch with your friends?
It's rated R.
Yeah. To begin with, like with my family, or I feel like my dad or mom, probably my dad showed it to me the first time. And then I don't remember. He's not like he was around every time I watched it. And I grew up in white suburbs, so I don't think I was really watching it with my friends like that either.
Yeah.
Also, not until like middle school or something.
Also, the Wayans, not to interrupt, but the Wayans reuse a bit in this film later on in Don't Be a Menace.
See, oh,
with the guy with the militant guy with the white girl, white wife.
That was hilarious.
And the little white kids who are reading the report they're doing.
Tim, did you recognize either of those two kids?
No.
Oh, I did. Well, I sort of did right off the bat.
Who are they?
So, the daughter, I was like, is that Kirsten Dunst?
Is it?
No.
No. It's Lexi from Jurassic Park.
What? That is her.
Yeah.
What about the boy?
I didn't immediately recognize the face or anything, so I didn't look him up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I was confused because they didn't look like they were mixed at all. Were those his kids or those his wife's kids?
His wife's kids.
Okay.
I feel like they didn't really care one way or another. Like they
could just wanted little white kids.
Yeah, basically they wanted that punchline joke.
The white kids reading this very militant paper about Abraham Lincoln
being white trash and how he got shot by another white trash.
Yeah.
It was pretty great. And all the bean soda, everything. Do you guys want to explain that?
I don't know. So, I mean, what was it? The Beautiful Struggle, written by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Mm-hmm. You read that?
No.
He does talk about, because his dad was into that sort of, I guess, community.
Nation of Islam?
I thought he was NAACP.
This is not Nation, but Black Power sort of, mm-hmm. Black Panther sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they were very much about, like, basically what sounds like bland food, like no soda, none of this sort of fun stuff that kids want. So sounds I think painful. That's kind of part of that whole sub-community. So, yeah.
And Keenan goes to him because he's like, all right, I got to take out Mr. Big. I think you guys would help. And he's like, where's everyone else? And it's like, well, they all got jobs. They're all working for the government now. So they had gone to protest at a government building. They went in with signs and they came out with jobs because they were hiring that day. Mm-hmm. So that's where everyone went. Really funny. What's your favorite thing about this movie, guys?
The villains. I think.
Mr. Big or?
Well, his henchmen in particular, Kadeem Hardison and Damon Wayne.
Those two are really good together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were great. And like the both the recurring jokes and I guess the, how do you say, expanding jokes. Like for instance, as they keep getting thrown down the stairs, they start to have more and more injuries on them. And so, like, when he's chasing Cheryl down the street, he's got a cane and a broken leg, and she just starts walking a little faster, walking, and he's skipping, like trying to keep up with
that
her.
That was really funny.
Yeah, like, the things that recur as well. And he finally just jumps out the window. And the joke is, they're like, there's two ways out of here. And he's like, oh, he just gets mad and jumps out the window. Was it Fly Guy or somebody's like, didn't somebody tell him about the elevator?
Yeah. It's pretty funny. Pretty funny. What about you, Tim?
Probably all the running jokes. There's a bunch of them. And they just keep popping up. And they're funny every time. And it's funny now. I've seen the movie countless amount of times. And these running jokes that I know are coming are still very funny.
So, this was weird to me that... Oh, we haven't gotten to influences yet. Sorry. Go ahead.
You already going to save it for influences?
It's sort of. It's in between. So, The Princess Bride is something I would have been watching right around the same time. I feel like this movie held the same level, like, stature. Maybe I was a year or two older by the time I was watching it. Mm-hmm. As far as you were saying, quotable. Mm-hmm. All, like, these scenes, these characters, all of that sticks in my mind. But I didn't keep watching it, like, past the 90s. Mm-hmm. So it's just weird. Like, this all comes back to me. All of these quotes, all of these gags, mm-hmm. It all comes back to me. Even the theme song I was singing, like...
Oh, at the end?
At the beginning, as it starts. I'm gonna get you, sucker, you dirty mother...
Don't say that.
Don't say that. Like, which is basically a reference to Shaft, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, that boy Shaft is a bad mother. Shut your mouth. Like... So, yeah.
I'm really glad I finally saw this movie. But to be honest, I was pretty bored for the first half an hour. I was just kind of, I mean, there were things that were I thought were funny, but I was just kind of like, okay. Okay. And, like, a lot of the gags, like, saw coming, and then I'm like, yeah, that's funny. But, like, it wasn't as funny as I think I expected it, but it might be because I've had a lot of this type of, so this might segue into the influences too, right? Like, scary movies, I saw all those, I lived through that, I lived through a lot of the, you know, don't be a menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood. So I've seen a lot of this. So I think, was that the one where she, like, they were like licking on the girl's toes and she had like crusty, mm-hmm. nasty, ew. So I think maybe it's because some of this is kind of old for me. Like, I'm just like, I've seen this, but this was great. Like, and I wish I had seen this earlier than some of that other stuff in the 90s.
The movie crescendos, I think, is part of, am I using that word correctly?
Because
you said
right.
You were kind of bored at the beginning, but as things pile on each other and you start to get to know the characters and the ongoing gags, mm-hmm. like, give me back my nickel. Like, all of that stuff that was set up earlier.
Yes, agree with that. But I think, so I think the favorite thing for me is all of the old guys that came out of retirement. I liked them a lot. And I remember they're like, "What? Why do you get to participate in this?" And then he's like, "I played football." Like, okay, fine. You.
And the guy who asked him, like, he's like, "Well, you got me." Because
it's Jim Brown.
Yeah, Jim Brown. But football. Also, why am I losing? One of the other ones played as well. Was it Richard Roundtree?
He might have played football, yeah.
Yeah, one of them...
Jim Brown definitely played football.
Yeah, so at least two of them were NFL players.
Yeah, that's the joke.
Yeah, so I liked them.
Oh, and the other... He's like, he was been in the army. He's got all of these medals on and all of that. And then it turns out he was basically a secretary. And... I don't remember which character he's meeting.
Yeah.
And he was in the military and it was the one-eyed.
Mm-hmm, the one-eyed guy.
Who does Sam. Not really show up again. Mm-hmm. So, and he's like, what did you do? Well, it looks like he's about to like really call him out for not being a real soldier. Turns out in Nam, he was doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And he was like, how did you lose your eye? And they were screwing around in the office, shooting paper clips at each other.
So silly. Yeah, that was I thought that was an interesting thing of like, usually, because you see that in so many movies of the soldier comes home and they don't really comment on, yeah, not everyone who goes and serves in the military comes, like, actually has a fighting role while they're there. And so that's him. He doesn't, he's never killed somebody.
Never been in combat.
Doesn't know how to, yeah.
Oh, man. And when he gets a splinter.
Oh, my God. That was so funny.
And then he tried to show her a letter at the end.
She's like, so, yeah, you're right. I'm okay, though. It really hurt at the time. He does the whole Rambo. It's like, is that from Rambo, First Blood?
From First Blood, yeah.
He's also, like, that gun is from First Blood, essentially, right?
That gun, man. Yeah, funny. All right, what about influences? Has this been influential?
Oh, yeah.
I think we talked about it several times.
Everything from Chappelle Show to, you know, what we saw on In Living Color to, you know, The Wins and their other movies, other adventures, other pop culture stuff, people quoting it, Don't Make Me Hop After You, all those quotes, all that stuff is still very much it's in the
probably the first time I saw Goldfish in a Shoe.
Yeah, all that stuff is still very much vibrant. I don't know if there are people under 30 who don't get it or who haven't seen it. I think for those of us 30 and over, we understand all the references. I don't know if people younger would understand any of the references or get any of those.
Might, because I guess it depends, because
yeah.
I didn't get the references when I was first watching it. I had to reach a certain age because that stuff was not 80s stuff they were referencing.
No.
They're referencing things from my parents, young or teenage.
But I mean, like this movie, because I don't know. There was a time when this movie was on television, and it's not on anymore. So I don't know if there are people under 30 who even know of the movie and could get any of those jokes.
Fair enough.
I'm really excited because I think I'm going to get a lot more jokes now going forward, because I really didn't know any of the references. There's very few that were in the movie that I'm sure I've heard them before and never understood why they were funny.
This is one of the movies
much better now.
Where me like trying to point out, because there's a lot of background references. Like when they're getting, they're at One-Eyed Sam, is that, and they're getting the weapons. There's one gun up on the back, and I'm pretty sure that's the same like carbine that Malcolm X is holding in the famous by any means necessary photo. There's a ton of references. I was like telling Shalia, I was like, this is like a reference to this. This is like a reference to this. And often I'm telling her shit she already knows, but in this case, not so much.
Yes, true. I think. This was also, I mean, like, you're pointing that part out. This was a very visually stimulating movie, I think. There was, like, little pieces to catch in each of the scenes and things that was really fun.
Question for you, Tim. I was wondering if they named him Jack because, like, in the 70s, that was kind of something you would just call somebody, hey, Jack, you know, like, just a kind of generic. So he was kind of almost like a generic hero name for the 70s.
I think so, yeah. Okay. He's the regular old Jack.
Sorry. I'm hungry.
Somebody's hungry over here. We gotta end this podcast.
Yeah, I guess we gotta wrap this up.
Well, so that's probably a good part, because the other really funny thing was the theme music and having the theme music follow him around. Like, every hero, this is my theme music. Every hero has one. And they are following around playing the band. And then Jack ends his at the end, too. We have theme music that we play at the end.
Kanye references on his song Power.
Does he?
Mm-hmm. How does
every
he
superhero
it?
Needs his theme music? Yeah. I didn't know it was like a reference to that, but that makes sense.
It makes sense.
And it's KRS-One.
Yeah.
Do you remember in Family Guy when... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Theme music. I like it. All right. Did everyone say their influence? Did you say influence?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I think we can. Yay. I'm going to go have lunch.
Now you're going to go eat. Yay. All right. So we'll be back next week at some point. I don't know what we're doing next week.
We haven't decided yet. Yeah. It's a mystery.
Fairly soon we need to do the second season of The Toys That Made Us.
All right.
That would be fun.
Okay.
All right.
We'll figure it out.
And?
We'll be back. Thank you.